What I might suggest we do is we'll have a break for morning tea now, so you can have a cup of coffee and we can have a cup of tea or whatever we like, and then we'll come back and have our questions for you after morning tea, so that we won't be rushed and we can take the time that your submission deserves.
Thank you.
So we'll come back in about 20 minutes time and we'll ask our questions on that. Again, we'll resume the hearing and now we'll see if we have questions for you, and we'll start with you, Mike.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Chairman. I note the section 42A report at policy 46 now refers to subcaption groups. Luke, have you had a look at that and see whether that satisfies you?
Yes, and I support that change.
Okay. And then in regard to the better recognition of the social economic aspects of farming, have you thought about where that could go and what it could be precisely in terms of a new policy or modification of existing policy or project?
Yeah, well, the council, the submissions of the catchment groups drafted a suggested policy that would provide that, so that is in the in the submissions, and I think probably in my evidence.
Yeah.
So yeah, we have provided a suggested wording for that.
26.
Whereabouts is that?
Point 26.
Of my evidence.
Yeah. Point 26.
Page 6. So it's such as point paragraph 27 is the suggested word.
Okay.
No, sorry, it is paragraph 26.
Alright, if that's you, that's good. I'll regarding Rule 17 and the use of used engine oil for road dust suppression, generally people are going away from using that now. Are you saying that you think that's still okay to use that?
No, I don't think I've said that, councillor, but it that was a point raised in the catchment group submissions.
Yeah. So, well, perhaps then you're happy with the rule the way that it is, that it doesn't, that it discourages the use of that and encourages the use of other more benign.
Yeah, I certainly haven't in my evidence given any evidence against that rule.
Yeah, okay. All right. Good. And, the farm environment plans, at the moment, it's, some people have said that it's relatively complex, farm environment plans, that if you have a plan that might replace some, they need to get consents and things. So do you think that the way that it is at the moment is too complex, or can it be improved, if you think that?
In terms of Appendix N?
Mm.
Well, I guess we assist farmers to put those plans together in certain cases, so that's where the farmer's chosen to come and get some professional help.
Yeah.
And certainly, you know, it's still their sort of plan and we help put it together, but at the end of the day they need to own it. So it's a hard one for me to answer because I'm not a farmer. I guess it might be better for one of these gentlemen to answer that one. But,
yeah.
From a consultant's perspective, you know, we put them together.
Just to add to that, we've personally done the farm focus activities planned through the years, and have done multiple ones with beef and lamb, and have actually done the one that beef and lamb has proposed to do, so you know, so that people can do, and we've found that the one that we've done ourselves more beneficial. Makes us think more about our business, because it is quite an intensive, labour-intensive thing for an ES to do, the farm focus plan. And it is very good, but I think to get farmers buy-in, they sort of need to think, and they know their farm and their water runs, and sort of doesn't run uphill generally, so yeah, those sort of
So you're saying it'll be perhaps not quite so complex, but...
Yeah, well, simple. The old KISS, simple, yeah. You know, keep it simple.
Yeah.
might say the last word, the last word.
Last word's stupid.
Yeah. And farmers are very practical people, so if they can see point. Things where they can improve, that's my opinion.
I think, Councillor, one thing I would note is that often we find with the clients, and it's where they're prepared to pay for someone to do it, often they all have the knowledge there in their head, it's just helping them to get it onto paper and working through what those requirements mean or those matters in Appendix E.
I think from in the Porokino we've had a big uptake with the farm plants. That's something we wanted to explore as a catchment group. We did the SMPs too and farm environment plans, which has been the land and deep in the catchment, and that was what we were looking for, is feedback and what the plans were like and, you know, was it useful to your farm? And I think most of the time it was more the process of the, you know, what you were trying to achieve that we saw the change. So it was more the thinking about why you're doing it that had the desirable outcomes on the farms. So it wasn't necessarily having the document as such, but more the process of getting that information for the document and why it's important. So that created the conversations. So, and that's where I found it really beneficial in the catchment. And then in the Porokino, we can actually take it to another level now because we can actually look in, and we're starting to look at, you know, what is the catchment going to do with those farm environment plans to have outcomes for the water quality and the issues that we've identified, not just on a farm scale, which is important, but also on a catchment scale. And that's where we're starting to head now, you know, where are the critical sources, how are we going to manage those so that we have good impacts on the water quality in the Porokino. So that's what we've been able to do with that information, and that's where it's been beneficial. Not so much having the document that when the compliance officer turns up, they want to look at it. That's no real benefit to us.
Mm. Yeah. Yes, I remember your original, when you came in originally, when we were at the Ascot, you talked about that, and a number of people have talked about water sampling and water testing on a farm situation, and you had done that. The concern there is that you are doing a water sampling program on a farm or in a catchment is really quite a complex thing, and getting that done so that you do, obviously not too onerous, but does capture the important parameters at the right time, seems to be perhaps a little bit too difficult for an individual farm.
I think you've got to look at why you're testing and what you're trying to achieve. So I'm not trying to get information to say how much nitrogen I'm leaching off my farm. Mm. What I'm wanting is a snapshot on a daily basis, on one particular day, of is there anything that's contributing continuously to my water supply. So that's what I'm looking for. So from that purpose, it's observed that objective. But from the council's point of view, it's not necessarily showing how much nitrogen my farm's leaking through the water supplies, because that could be one or two flushes that happens in a year, and I'm not going to capture those, nor do I want to. But I do want to see what are the continuous sources of contaminant. And in my case, on my farm, I started to identify the septic tanks were a continuous contribution to that water, receiving water supply. And so I can start to put some procedures in place to deal with that. So that's my objective with that. And I think, you know, that's the trouble with water testing. If you try and do something different with what your intention is, you end up with a distorted outcome.
All right, thanks. Thank you very much.
Yeah, good morning. Just regard your rule 13 in the proposed wording to be added to that rule to exclude temporary effects associated with the cleaning and blocking of drains. In practice, how would that work? You're saying basically would that override the discoloration 20 metres from the point of discharge?
Well, basically saying it's that the maintenance would need to meet the requirements of one. So you'd need to maintain the drains in a manner that do not create conspicuous change to colour, etc. So I guess there might be ways the farmer can come up, techniques they can do to do that. But can't have a rule that doesn't comply with Section 70. So, yeah. So it's an attempt to come up with something. If that doesn't work, then I'd fall back, and it just needs to stay as it is.
Yeah. So there are techniques that can mitigate the...
I probably have to put that one over to the farmers here. Yes. Sorry, I was just listening to submitters yesterday, and I picked that up from just listening in.
Yeah, and I'm interested in just pursuing that and what ideas they've got.
It's quite difficult, especially if it's going into a main water body, how you would create some sort of settling or discoloration, sort of pond or tank or something. I'm not quite sure, especially if it's, you can certainly do it, try and do it at low flows or drier parts of the year, dry times of the year, sorry. It's something I've thought quite a bit about, but I haven't actually come up with a practical solution yet, and there'll be something that we'll try this year, but yeah, whether it works to full effect.
There's just certain stream flows that will make it damn impossible to do it if they're shallow and quick. It's just something very difficult to do, and you're not generally chasing your drainage and trying to do drainage work in the high flows of discoloration like in the winter. So practically it's a very difficult thing to achieve.
And quite often you get the, crap, I got this wrong. And that's always it's usually when the council turns up down the road. Murphy's law, but there's circumstances on farms where sometimes you get away with it, and other times you breach it, and then you just, as long as you don't repeat the mistake twice, that's sometimes very hard because you're working with an environment that changes, and sometimes you don't read the science right.
It's clearly understood there's a requirement to try and mitigate that.
Yes, yeah. And I think most farmers don't like their farmers going, Bob's up the roads doing something major.
As farmers are all very aware that the public will see what's coming off our properties. We're all very aware of that, very conscientious, and having expectations on ourselves how we want that to be viewed as well. So,
And once again, we also expect if somebody does breach those willingly that they get pinged, because that's a perception on us that we don't like either.
Just in regard to the Three Rivers catchment, is that a self-contained, like, I think there's, have you got catchment above you in terms of farming activity above the catchment?
Coming into the Matara, yes. So you've got Matara that goes along the bottom side.
Catchment groups of catch.
Catchments are all farming above the catchment.
Yes, basically for all the tributaries on the east and western side of the Matara and that below Matara, so below Waimarama Stream down to below the Matara Island Bridge, we basically include everything that comes in from the east and west, but obviously, from above Matara. So we sort of start about here and all this area up through round and way down below where I am and up through round to. So basically the Matara River is our only inlet. Then there's the lower Matara catchment below us. Yes.
So when in 2014 I started the Porokino, and there's a reason why I started with the Porokino, because it was very defined. It was quite easy to say this is the boundaries, and I own a farm at Wyndham too, so I was very keen to start up a catchment group there. So I thought, right, I'll start from the top of the Matara and go to the bottom. The disconnect was just huge, and that's what concerns me with the management of farmers being involved with somebody living in Athol, which has a different ethos to somebody at the bottom of the Matara with different issues. So hence, we actually thought, in the case of the Matara, it would be better to get local communities involved. And it seems to be around towns, connections with towns is quite a strong thing. And so if you can do that connection with the town and the catchment and responsibility within that, you actually get a lot of interconnection. And especially around schools, because we're finding one of the vehicles of schools is really big, because that connects us naturally anyway. So that's why the Matara is probably the Three Rivers. Is it was at a pub that we got the name, Three Rivers, so we're not highly original, but it allowed us to identify those issues in that area and ownership of those, which is quite critical.
Yeah, thanks for that. That's what I didn't, not knowing the area intimately, I just wanted to understand that. Was it a true subcatchment, or I think you've explained it's the way it's been formed.
Ironically, with the Three Rivers, I actually see there's different issues there, and I wouldn't be surprised if there won't be a subgroup that will have to form from that, because they'll be dealing with different issues. And I think your one's quite different from your farm.
Yeah, like basically the side of the Matara are quite different.
Yeah, it's probably not as clearly defined as the Purukino catchment.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Sub-catchment.
Yeah, understand that. Good work. Thank you.
Eric? Yeah, I think it's an interesting journey you're on. You started out as the first intention to be a communication group, and you've ended into a proactive group. And just thank you for sharing with us this morning. You've kind of answered my first question, which was the FMU's probably too big a unit to really be successful. So that was going to be my first question. The second one is that those that are in your group, you've got pretty much how much buy-in to what you're doing within the two catchment groups that you've got? You mentioned 300 farms, so how representative of that wider catchment group are you?
I think this is going to be answered by two different... I'll start with the Purukino, which, because it's so confined, it's easy to identify. I think we're getting close to 85-90% of farmers. They're not always engaged, but they're definitely aware of the... Yeah. You know, it's there, they're aware of the farmers that are involved, so the questions are getting asked. And quite often the conversations around the field days are wider spreading than the people that are there. They're busy people, so I tend to find it's more the networks that work better. We are now connected with the local iwi, which has been a significant step, you know, forward, and that was the recognition of the Purukino working in their space too. And so we are connecting, you know, a lot further than what just the local farmers. Riverton's very strongly sees their identity with us now, and also the schools are identifying very strongly within the Purukino catchment group. But the Three Rivers has been a little bit different. These locals are probably better too.
The thing with the Three Rivers catchment is it's quite massive. It is quite, it's probably, yeah, and we've obviously just discussed about the fact that it will potentially become smaller, and most, pretty much everybody in the catchment group is aware of it, but not everybody can get to community days and those sort of things. Everybody's busy people, so. But yeah, the uptake and knowledge that we exist and what we're about. We've slowly been working on a lot of communications through newsletters, and yeah, it's a tough one whether we get on the social media thing, but yeah, it's just, you know, we try not to put the horse before the cart, so to speak. Yeah, we're slowly, and want people to have a positive, experience of the catchment group. We don't want to be push. We want to educate and inform. That's purely what we're about. So, yeah.
So, what would be the most positive gain or the most positive thing that's happened out of the two groups since you've been formed?
Probably for us, the amount of people that have gain the confidence to actually know what the issues are and have submitted or have stood at the hearings. That's been one of the big things, and also people are now certainly more aware of the trends of water quality and how, you know, a lot of information's already always been out there. It's just getting it, educating people on things like the wintering and the slope rule and the setback rules and those sorts of things.
So has there been an uptake in things like farm management plans or water testing? And
yeah, there is.
That's happening, is it?
Yeah, so there's more people starting to do the LEPs or the GRNZ ones, or there is, I know there's people on the waiting list for the farm focus plans, but there's also people that are quite keen to do things like nitrate testing and all that sort of stuff, which we are, as a forum in Southland, there is hopefully funding coming for some tests. Mm. And farmers are quite keen to do those sort of things. Like this $600 nitrate and phosphorus test that you can buy. You know, so people are quite keen to. Oh, we are sponges, so And it's just finding those areas and issues with things.
One of the big things from the Porokino has been more the engagement. You know, so if there's a need, we can actually connect, and it's not a political party or a, you know, it hasn't got an agenda. It's basically just there for knowledge sharing. We're not in compliance. We're there just to an aid and to assist, and in whatever way we can. And that's been a very good vehicle for farmers to engage with the local council and to have probably more positive experiences. So I know David was saying, you know, when he drives up the road now in this white truck, it's not 308s aimed at him. It's more, oh, here he is, what can he do for me? Which is a different attitude. So.
Do you test the Matau at the confluence of the Waimumu and again at the Seaward Down Bridge to see what you're doing, or?
No, well, we haven't. Well, we've only been going 18 months, so we right. sort of use the others, well, the ES sites at about Dongwa there, and then there's the one at, yeah, so that's, we're quite lucky. And
oh, you've got a couple that aren't too far from each end of your catchment.
Yeah, so it was, we were quite lucky in the fact that it was actually, that was the boundaries. Yeah, so we're quite lucky in that bridge.
And there's quite a lot of groundwater testing done around us and boys on farms. I know probably six within our small district of Brighton. So we're already getting a lot of testing done for us. It's just trying us to
get collating it.
Yeah, and get our heads around what are the trends and what impact. Is it happening? Is it been 5 years ago? Is it today? And just trying to work through that too.
And I think from the Porokino point of view, it's now, you know, it's you go from an interest group to actually, if we're going to be using a public asset, how are we going to manage that? And so we want to start to be able to show a public perception of us taking care of that resource and using it responsibly. So, you know, that'll come around for us taking some of that information and starting to work alongside council and saying, this is what we would like in this catchment. You know, does this align with what you're doing? And there'll be some things that will be, and there'll be some things that we just want to do because we're community, so it might be a community hall that we might want to deal with, which is not ES's interest, but it's interest to the group, and that we allow that vehicle for that to happen. Mm. We create community again.
Okay, thank you for that.
Lloyd? Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Got three or four things I'd like to cover off. Rule 13, we spoke about this yesterday. Had you thought of a suction tanker as being part of the solution there?
Yeah.
And the reason I suggest that, because it's a question that's been asked quite a bit, is that the picture we heard yesterday or saw yesterday was actually discharged into a stream, but a lot of the time you're actually dealing with drains and sub-parts of drains, and the last thing you want to do is have the product actually go down the drain and actually settle in the drain below you for your main water body. So can I suggest that that may be part of the solution that you're looking for? Can I just go back to your point on, this is the Porokino, good management practices in point 28, 26 to 28. You made the comment earlier on about the investment and infrastructure, and you have the example there of a wintering shed, and I was just wondering whether that was, whether it read as correctly as you wanted. And I wondered whether it was not necessarily the assets you had, but how you worked with the assets that you had was actually more important, because you could have disasters on with or without dairy sheds. Mm. Is that a fair comment?
Yeah, that would be a fair comment.
Thank you. Just going back to Appendix N, and with the number of plans that you have done through the beef and lamb, are the things that Appendix N does not cover that you think it should cover, or is there things that are in Appendix N you think are overboard and there's a better way of doing it? Is there a, because it covers quite a range of things in there, and it's about industries have plans, but farmers have plans, as you've suggested, that are beneficial to the way their farms run. Is there things in there that we need to be considered?
Would it be all right if I can go away and consider with the groups and with Luke what that would be.
That would be great. And also, you mentioned that you've done them once, but is there a need, or is there a regular time we should actually go back and check that? In other words, we're just checking or updating those plans as new technology comes along and new ideas come along. Would be handy as well.
Yep, we could add that into the suggestions.
Yep.
I do think we do need to have some sort of updating of it to make it relevant.
And if you could think about whether that happens with or alongside EES, so who would actually do that, or how would that actually happen? The plan talks about being available to on request. Whether you think that's still appropriate as well would be great.
Yeah. Because I think we're using a public asset, I think there needs to be accountability to that, and so that needs to be recognised in the plan, in my opinion. So, but we will talk about that, how much of that goes. Because you've sort of got this, in my view, you've got this conflict between private ownership and a public asset, and where does the twain meet in the middle?
Yeah. And I think one of the touchstones is we've given a suggestion through the plan through Appendix N of a touchstone that EES is interested in, and through the work that you're doing, we just want to get some clarification of whether that's on the money or whether it's not, really.
Okay. You got all that down, Luke? Luke thought he was going to be free by this afternoon.
It's been a topic for a number of submitters, cool. And you've done a lot of work in this area and probably could provide greater connection with the community. So it's one of the discussion topics that we've been thinking about.
Yep, no problems at all. It'd be good if we can go away and think about that recently.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Good call. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
No questions, but just 2 points I want to just let you know about. We talked about policy 46 on the way through. Just to let you know that prior to the hearing panel wrote down questions that we had for the section 42A officers, and they provided written response to those questions. There's a 79 page document available on the webpage, which is their written answers to our initial questions. At page 17 of that document, at paragraph 6.239, you guys don't need to write this down because he is. The staff advised us that the change that they recommended to policy 46 was an error, that it was in response to a Meridian submission, and they had actually had intended to amend policy 47 instead. And policy 47 is recommended to be amended to include catchments and subcatchments. So the issues, the officers are still recommending that the issue be addressed, but by way of a change to policy 47 instead of 46. So just to let you know, that's the latest staff advice to us.
Thank you.
And then just in terms of your submission, you discussed policy 39, which is the
permitted baseline.
Yeah. So just to let you know that there's a very similar policy, which you're probably aware of, in the Environment Canterbury Land and Water Plan that has been appealed to the High Court on point of law. Commissioner Allison and I were both on the panel that looked at all of those Environment Canterbury Plan changes, including the original Land and Water Plan. So probably what I'll suggest to this panel is that we await the outcome of that High Court decision on that policy before deciding what we might do, if anything, with it here. So again, that's just a bit of information for you. And I'm not sure what the timing on that is, but
thank you.
If that High Court decision comes out before we release our decision, we'll obviously have regard to it, and if not, we'll certainly have another look at that policy. And so finally, I'd just like to commend you for two things. First of all, for forming your catchment groups. You say you're involved with a body that's looking at these things nationwide. I'm also involved with a large number of regional councils nationwide. And certainly actions and activities of groups like yourselves are to be commended and encouraged, so well done. And also similarly for taking the time to put together, a very detailed submission with setting out precisely the changes you want and the reasons for that makes our job easier. And just to let you know, we'll give serious consideration to all of the points you raise.
Thank you.
Thanks very much for coming in and taking the time.
Thank you.